Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way.
Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. I'm Tara Melber along with Lynette Ezell. And today we want to welcome Mary Dell Sandberg to the podcast. Mary Dell is married to Bruce and is an adoptive mom and grandmother. She's a national speaker and board member of the Christian Alliance for Orphans and is the founder of a new organization called Together for Good. We are so glad you're here today. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
You know, we have a print in Kevin's office, and we've moved it around quite a bit, but it says, 1 Chronicles 16:24, declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. And so, Mary Dell, I can't help but think about our families when I hear that verse. But if you'll just tell us a little bit more about your family and how you came to become the picture of the family that you are today.
Yeah, so back in, Bruce and I have been married for 36 years, which is a really, really long time.
It is.
And back in the day, we had birthed three children and were enjoying the life of a, basic suburban family in Minnesota. And we were listening to Focus on the Family and heard about the crisis of the abortion issue. This is back in 1989. You girls probably weren't even born yet. And
Oh, yeah. We were born and married.
And our pastor, John Piper, was actually put in jail for the night for protesting at an abortion clinic. And so between that story of his overnight in jail and the words from Focus on the Family about the crisis in the abortion world and families that were women that were facing crisis pregnancies, we're driving to the bank one day, and I had a four-year-old, and two-year-old. And my middle child said, Mommy, why couldn't we help with these babies that mommies can't take care of? Why would they have to abort them? We could call them and we could tell them we could help. And it was first so sad to have to talk to my children about abortion at such a young age.
Right.
That trauma alone was hard. But in that moment, we'd had two girls and we had a son that I had desperately prayed for. And I started dreaming, what would it look like if he could have a baby brother? And came home and told my husband, I think we should, consider a baby for Ted and a brother. And he said, we have enough children, everything's fine. But in those moments, within days, one of my girlfriends called me and said, do you know anybody who would be interested in adopting a child born in America who was African American, a brand new baby? And I said, what?
Wow.
I said, that can't be happening.
Wow. And the Lord was lining that up, wasn't he?
Well, written on the wall, I tell you.
And she had adopted from India. And the agency had called her to say, would you ever be interested in a little brown baby that had curly hair instead of straight hair? And at that point, her and her husband weren't in a position where they could adopt again. But I was absolutely just completely amazed there could be a child in America that needed a family. And found out later that during that time, if you were an African-American woman and you had were in a crisis pregnancy, you had very few options because nobody was waiting in line to adopt your child. And back in the community, of course, families would help each other with babies and grandmas would, raise grandchildren. But in this particular case, she didn't want that for her child, nor was it possible. And so I called this agency and they said, yes, indeed. Back in the day, at this point in time, there were many children who were waiting for placement purely because of the color of their skin. And God in his sovereign plan had already paved the way in terms of I'd been at college in Chicago and was very involved in the African-American community. And so this didn't seem like a big step to me. It seemed like a natural step. Mm-hmm. Although my husband, of course, was like, what? We can't afford another child. We can't afford adoption. So the miracle happened and Joshua came into our family and we didn't want him to be the only black child in our family, especially since we live in Minnesota, which is very small in diversity. And so then a year later, we adopted again from another agency and brand new babies, 6 weeks old. And then we thought we were done and God had a different plan. And so Isaac came into our life, who his name says it all in terms of we thought we had them, then we didn't have them, put them on the altar before the
that
Lord.
That is exactly why we have an Isaac.
I know. And he has brought us lots of laughter as well. And then, of course, we were totally done having children. This is good, six children. And 7 years later, the Lord, through some funny circumstances, allowed us to then adopt a little girl. And 2 years later, another little girl. So we're full. Our youngest are now 13 and 15. And our oldest is 35. So, yep, it's a busy place.
Wow.
Well, that's such a picture of the Lord saying that, you know, let the Lord set your boundaries.
Right.
And how he broadens our tents in his timing and in his way. And for our family, it's been an incredible ride. We're still on it. Mm-hmm. We're still hanging on some days, most days, this morning. But, you know, just the way that he builds families, it's just beautiful. And mm-hmm. I just love the diversity he's brought to our life. And just with the different personalities is what I'm talking about. Just we all laugh at each other and what we're learning from each other. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to a family that is considering maybe multiracial adoption?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the beautiful thing now is there's so many resources out there. You know, there's mm-hmm. just tons of books on adoption, on race and transracial adoption. And so the opportunity to educate yourself is there, of course. And we would never want to be rushing into this kind of situation. I think it's, you know, you need to be prayerful and careful. While it again mm-hmm. provides some sort of an opportunity that we think we're somehow rescuing a child, we need to remember that we were first rescued. And so that we don't want to position ourselves that this is about us saving some child, but rather about us, God using us to increase our family. And so parenting mm-hmm. needs to be your first issue. Do I want a parent? Not do I want a child? Because I think that's confusing sometimes.
Right.
But also then, you know, seek the counsel of someone else, your trusted friends in your life, because it is a big adjustment. We did lose friends when we adopted back then. People thought we were crazy, and we were at some level blazing a trail that hadn't been walked much before us in our area. But there are people who are going to feel uncomfortable just with adoption in general, and of course then the racial issue becomes another piece of it themselves. So, and then of course jump in. I think that the beauty of adoption really is that there's a process, right? So what's the worst case scenario that, you know, you think God's leading in this direction? Then get a home study done. It's a small investment, but at least then mm-hmm. you're ready. Should God call you to a specific child or specific scenario, you're more prepared and ready to obey than if you just sit back and go, I wonder, you know, wonder if. So worst case scenario, an adoption agency gets a couple grand of your money and they can use that for ministry. Mm-hmm. Or best case scenario, in God's timing, he leads you to the child that belongs to you. And I would say that's the absolute most important thing, is that God is sovereign. His hand, mm-hmm. I mean, his will is going to be accomplished. And so it may be that it takes two or three rounds of closed doors or closed situations, but he is faithful in that situation every single time.
I love what you say about being prepared. And Lynette has said this before. I've heard her tell people, just do the first thing.
Yeah.
Just fill out the piece of paper. Just take the step. Because in the Lord's sovereign plan, he's asking you to be obedient to what he's calling you to. And you may not know what that is long term, but if you prepare yourself, then you're available and ready for his purpose and plan. So,
and when you take that first step, just like Mary Dale, like you said, just take the first step toward getting a home study mm-hmm. done, and it seems like the fear kind of just dissolves around you. It's not as big as we had it in our mind before we started.
Yeah, completely.
And it is amazing to me, because even when you were saying, you know, the Lord, you heard focus on the family, and then you know, your pastor was placed in jail overnight, and then your children brought it up, and then you talk to Bruce about it. And, you know, the way that the Lord does the chess pieces in our lives, we don't often get when we're in the middle of it. It's like you're in the forest and you can't see anything because of all of the trees, but yet the Lord's in the helicopter and he sees the big plan and how to navigate you through that. And so just being able to you know, see how the Lord's leading and then take those steps to educating yourself and to be, like what you said, prayerful and careful.
Mm-hmm. It's a great ride.
And I think knowing too... Yeah, one of the things that you know, had talked about is that you don't know how people are necessarily going to react. And I think that as we pray and seek that just because we come up against people who might not agree with what we're doing does not mean that we shouldn't proceed. Because it is scary for people.
It is. And I just think, at any risk, I mean, it's just a different way of living mm-hmm. life. And of course, our faith right. journey, regardless of this or whether it's deciding to move your family to China, I mean, either way, people are going right. to think you're crazy. And so to just go, mm-hmm. this is about the Lord and us and our family and what he's called us to. And also, who would ever want to miss the journey, right? The journey of faith, mm-hmm. that's faith not by sight, but by trusting in the one who knows right. better, who is at work, who has planned mm-hmm. works for us to do. Before the beginning of the foundation of the world, he knew the path that we would walk in and the works that we would do. Mm-hmm. And so it just becomes an exciting adventure. And we laugh regularly about the journey and how what a ride it's mm-hmm. been.
When you said that you live in an area that's not super diverse, how have you experienced racial remarks toward your family or your children? And if so, which I'm sure you have, because we all have, then how did you deal with that? I mean, you started this journey before this big church movement began, so you were sort of like a, you know, you were blazing the trail. I'm sure that was difficult.
I think it was most surprising of people within the church who really mm-hmm. just didn't want to go there or were uncomfortable with the topic. And a lot of it, you know, is around that whole issue of, is this your real child or your adopted mm-hmm. child, and how we put labels on people.
Right.
So that was hard and painful and mostly just being misunderstood. But as mm-hmm. we've raised these kids now, people say the darndest things. And I'm just amazed at how, pardon my French, but how stupid people are and uneducated yes. in adoption in general, but then also mm-hmm. the issue of race. And it's been a very mighty long journey in so many ways mm-hmm. of, I had no idea, you know, I'm thinking this is 2017 for goodness sakes. And I really thought that
right.
if I was going to encounter it, it would have been the first time around in 1991 and 92 when we adopted our mm-hmm. first child. But things are so much more charged right now racially. And so just mm-hmm. in the last month, we've had 4 situations where the principal has had to call me to say that my children have been verbally assaulted. And so this mama bear in me is having a hard time with these issues right now. And you have to be aware, you have to position yourself in a position of, you know, God has called us to this, that he's not going to leave us in it, but also really pray about the people that God puts in your life and the way that he surrounds us with good support. So, you know, we didn't plan it this way, but it just so happened that right across the street, a neighbor moved in who was a mixed race family. Who does that but our father? Like, he takes care of us.
Right.
When our boys started doing basketball, well, it's a primarily, predominantly white area, our basketball coach was an African-American man. What a gift to our African-American boys at that
right.
moment in time. And so he orchestrates our lives. And he's not going to, we think that we're going to have to be the full source provider for our children, but we aren't. Like, we are not the end all. God orchestrates for our children's needs so much better than we can. And even in just this latest issue at school, and honestly, the poor principal, he's kind of afraid to even call me now. He like trembles when he talks to me because he knows how sad this is and how sad he knows to me. And I'm pretty up on these things in concerning school is they had hired a diversity director for that particular school. And that African-American woman was able to walk into my daughter's world at just the right time and comfort her. And she came home feeling so blessed that there was an advocate for her. Yes, mommy was her advocate, but in that moment, there was someone in that building that could make her feel safe. But the world is what it is, and it's a fascinating. I mean, I could go on all day talking about racism because people say stupid things in front of me because they don't know that's my child out in the choir concert singing the solo, or that's my child on the basketball court. And so we'll be sitting in the stands, and people say terrible things. And if I could have one message to go out to this whole audience right now is wake up, Christians. And we all need to say, I'm sorry to one another and think of a new way of loving one another. Mm-hmm. So that part of the brokenness is more painful than ever. But the beauty is these little girls have big brothers who are now 24 and 25, who they call and say, here's what happened today. And those brothers are praying for them and encouraging them. It's been a beautiful thing.
That is beautiful. I love when you say, you've told me before, to pray for divine appointments and relationships and be intentional, and even training those people within your home that your girls feel they're close enough to their brothers to be able to call them and say, I'm really struggling with this today, and that your boys are encouraging your girls. But praying for those divine appointments, you're right. No, we can't manufacture relationships outside. So the Lord places people in our lives, and we have to recognize His hand in that. I mean, you know, Lynette and I didn't live anywhere close to each other for the last several years, and the Lord moved us within 3 miles of one another. And now our children even have not only their siblings, but now have each other. Mm-hmm. And that's been a huge blessing to our families.
It has. It has. And you do have to look for those positive role models for your children. We had an incredible math teacher that helped my African-American daughter. And, you know, just those role models just, I saw, gave her such confidence, you know, that, oh, I can do this. Or, you know, and speaking truth into her life, but encouragement and acceptance into her life. But seeking out those role models.
Right. I remember talking to you, Mary Dell, about that specifically for our younger two boys who were brought home from Ethiopia. And one of the things that you said was look for those positive role models. And so when I was looking for a new pediatrician, there just so happened to be a really brilliant pediatrician in our area who's African American. And honestly, the boys loved going for their checkups because he really took it upon himself to talk to the boys about racial issues and about things that they might be facing and about you're gonna work hard in school and encouraging them in those ways that we were encouraging them at home. But to come from this brilliant African-American pediatrician to our boys was just priceless.
Invaluable. It really
is. Such a beautiful picture of God who really does care about the most private details of our lives. Me as a mama bear, I like to manipulate and control. And and so
I never do that.
It's hard to say. No problem here.
And so it's so much better when we just get on our knees and say, we can't do this alone, Lord, apart from you. This isn't going to work. And in our family, of course, that's taken its next generation. Our oldest daughter has also adopted, and a couple from Ethiopia and one from Uganda. And so the incredible opportunity of living this beautiful life has just blossomed in so many ways. But she also then is engaging in the same struggles, right? The school district and the kids who say stupid things.
Right.
So we're just thankful that we have a father who loves us intimately and knows our children better than we do.
So you said your oldest daughter has adopted, and she's also adopted transracially. As your biological kids were growing up, how do you feel like it affected them in positive ways or ways that they struggled with it? And how did you
maneuver that? Well, you know, children when they're young are they don't notice what's going on in the world. They're not really aware. And so pretty much all of it was just a huge blessing in terms of relationships and opportunity to just grow our family and be a light in our community. But as they grew older, we had a couple situations where people were really mean in our neighborhood or painted stuff in our driveway and things like that. And so they were at an impressionable age of 12, 13, 14 to go, wow, this is really sad and it hurts. And it just changes forever the direction of your heart and life, right? You become very aware of how necessary the Lord is in our lives. But also to be more discerning about who you hang with, what kind of friends you have, the messages the world is sending. I'll never forget my daughter wrote a paper in junior high, I think it was, what it's like to be a minority in my own family. Because by then we had more black kids than white kids. So we just journey together. And, you know, again, I think wraparound support's essential. Like, don't do this alone. Don't be parenting alone in general. But certainly in cases of adoption, we need the rest of the body of Christ to surround us in these times.
How did you engage your child in not only in your culture as, you know, in your family when they came home, although yours were babies, but even so, even more, how did you ever engage them in the African-American culture?
We just looked for opportunities. Again, those basketball friends became our closest friends. they grew up together, mm-hmm. and they would always fight the opposite, in their little worlds. It's like, well, I want to have a whole bunch of different friends. I'm not going to focus on just this. They wanted to normalize. I think the strongest mm-hmm. need of any adopted child is to belong. And so whatever their local neighborhood is, they want to belong there. They want to belong in their family. They want to feel normal. And yet, of course, every day their skin color can scream out against a world that doesn't understand them as well. And so it's a dance of sorts.
Mary Dale, I noticed in my biological children that it was life-changing for them to come from a multiracial family. Now, we have Asian children and African-American daughter, and, so we're, and I just, can I just say I got my DNA testing done and I'm from everywhere? I'm not at all what I thought I was, and I can't believe from all the places that I am. And so we do, it sounds like what your family does, we laugh through things, mm-hmm. and that really helps. But I noticed when my son went to college, my biological son, that he refused to room with just Caucasian, guys, or, he wanted diversity in his mm-hmm. life. And so he did. I mean, he purposely sought out an apartment with diversity and purposely made those friends. But then he transferred to another university on the West Coast and is still, he loved it mainly, Christ-centered, and it's so diverse. And, we didn't do that. The Lord did that mm-hmm. in his life. And I'm so proud of that, that's his comfort zone.
That is a very powerful thing. It's a very powerful reality. And on every mm-hmm. level, for all of our children, they would say they feel that they have the opportunity to be comfortable in either race. My boys yes. who yes. were adopted, they will say to us, we're so thankful because we feel like we fit in both worlds and we can transfer back and forth.
Right.
But the value of, no matter how you look at it in America at this point in history, any other diverse population is a minority. That's probably won't always be true. Mm-hmm. But to be children and adult, young adults who pursue diversity, who pursue love and care of those who are different than themselves is a rich, rich experience. And for sure in our family, that's been a truth. My oldest son, who was my birth child, 3, he became the warrior who was going to protect his brothers no matter what. He faced those, comments in mm-hmm. high school when he'd be sitting in a room. His brothers weren't there, but he'd be hearing things that weren't appropriate, and he would, make the statements and be that person to advocate for his brothers. So it is for sure a benefit. Our world just needs so much more of that, and I think that's a benefit, that all that God has done in the adoption world now is that provided just an eye-opening experience of God is much bigger than what we ever imagined and much more glorious than we could ever have imagined. And that we value and need each other much more than we could ever have imagined. So to bring that to your family on a personal mm-hmm. level becomes, those are going to be our change agents, right? They're going to be the people who seek out the church that's, might be different than their own or drive a little bit further to be a part of a diverse congregation. And that work will never be done this side of heaven, but we need to pursue.
And that's where healing even for our nation comes, is by having that mindset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Mary Dale, we really appreciate your insight and wisdom today and just the encouragement mm-hmm. that this will bring to so many families. We know that parenting is never easy. I've got chapters on that. and we make mistakes along the way, but the Lord does give sweet victories
yes, he does.
In this journey. And we appreciate your transparency. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mary Dale.
Yep. Great to be with you, girls. Love you both.
You've been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. We're so glad you've taken time to listen today. Keep in mind, we're a ministry of the North American Mission Board and funded through the Annie Armstrong offering and your giving to the cooperative program. We look forward to talking more about adoption, fostering, and orphan care and how you can be involved.